Welcome to the sixth episode of the Think Wildlife podcast. Today we have Adam Barlow, who is the founder and executive director of Wild Team Conservation, one of the leading educational conservation platforms in the world.
So welcome, Adam. It's a pleasure to have you on our podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me.
I just wanted to ask about Wild Team. So why do you start this organization and what is your long-term vision?
Well, before we started this organization, what led to the starting up Wild Team was I was studying tigers in first Nepal and Bangladesh. And in Bangladesh, we started working on trying to change things for tigers, trying to save tigers. And so I worked there for about 10 years. And I realized that my training, my PhD in basically ecology, didn't really help me save tigers very much. It helped me understand about how tigers lived in the jungle, but it really didn't give me the skills to save them. And I spent a lot of time failing in what I wanted to do. I was passionate about saving tigers. I just kept failing, really. And the reason I was failing is I didn't have the skills I needed to design and manage the work I was trying to do. So we got those skills in, and that really transformed our work in Bangladesh. And we went from seeing the tigers disappear to seeing the tigers starting to increase. So that was a great bit of success for us. But it was all down to the skills we had. And so we started Wild Team in Bangladesh to help save tigers. And then after that, we started up Wild Team UK to provide skills to people so that they could make the same difference in their careers. I know how many passionate people there are out there and trying to do conservation. And there's so few jobs. There seems so few opportunities. And what few jobs there are, you know, are often in richer countries. And I know all conservationists want to make a big difference. So our vision is to have it so that every conservationist can get the skills and network they need to have a really fulfilling career, but also to make a measurable difference to wildlife conservation. So for us, it's all about empowering people to do conservation. That's our big dream.
What has been the greater impact of a Wild Team in the conservation field?
That's a good question. So we measure impact, we measure direct impact, the thing that we're in charge of, or kind of we're more in control of. And we measure that simply in terms of how many people we train. So we've given out about 1,700 skills certificates, and that's to about 1,500 conservationists from 91 different countries. So we feel good about having trained a lot of people. Not all of them are in a position to do something with those skills. Some of them are getting those skills so that they can even just get their first conservation job. Others are already in conservation jobs and then can use their skills. So our indirect impact is we measure in terms of then what do they do with that training or that skill. So we do that through an annual survey, which we just completed. And that's a kind of cumulative thing. We do that every year. And we find out from that survey that our skills have, for example, helped the trainees raise £2.9 million in conservation funds. It also means that they've spent £23 million in conservation funds more effectively. And most importantly of all, applying the skills that we provide has helped 5.25 million square kilometres of wild areas be better conserved. So that doesn't mean that all those square kilometers are safe, you know, and our training is one component of one contributor to if a species or a land is saved. But we know we're contributing to that effort on a really big scale. So that's how we measure impact, and that's what our impact has been. And that, you know, to get down to, you know, where it's helped or what it's helped, you know, we've helped conserve the application of our training has helped conserve you know, species such as tigers, sea turtles, bison, parakeets. It's helped everywhere from Yellowstone to lots of national parks in different places in Africa, in Nigeria, in Kenya, Uganda. So that's how we look at impact, and that's what our impact's been.
What's the main target audience of wildlife? People entering the conservation field or people already in the field?
Yeah, both of those, because we just see it as part of the same kind of it's conservationists, but at different stages in their career. So we support both of those, and we train people in the same skills, whether they're a student, whether they're a you know, after university they're seeking a job, or they've got a job in university. All of those people. So we've trained, you know, everyone from CEOs to someone with a degree in zoology. Everyone, really.
What is Wild Team doing to become more accessible for those who face various barriers?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something I'm working on right now. So what we're working on, and that's our passion, is to make it accessible. It's not really any use to us if we just train a few people. So we're now looking to raise funds to cover the costs of full bursaries for people that want to take our courses but can't, and then have a simple application process so people can access those. At the moment, you know, take a course with us, it costs about, let's say, £200. And that's not very much for what the course provides. But for someone who hasn't got £20, you know, that's a huge cost. It's, you know, it's impossible. So we don't want it so that our training is just accessible to the people with £200 spare to spend up. We also know that, you know, people are coming out of university with debts, and we also know that everyone we survey is basically interested in our training. So yeah, it's up to us to raise funds to cover those full bursaries, and we want to do that on a really big scale. Because if we do on a smaller scale, we're not really having a great effect on conservation. But if we could do a big scale, let's, for example, say, give out, you know, at least 100 bursaries per country, you know, to start off with, then we're starting to scale up capacity. And what I'm really excited about in that respect, and I don't know about what you feel about this, Anish, is that at the moment, from my perspective, conservation is in the hands of just a few people, really. You know, there's lots of conservationists here and there and lots of people striving, but all the resources are in the hands of a few organizations that are doing their best, you know, and they're normally situated in the West, in the States or in Europe or something. And there's some, you know, brilliant ones emerging as well in places like India, but there's a real disparity, you know, and that means because where all that conservation technical expertise and where all the funds get channeled through, that means that you know, there's very few opportunities also. All the opportunities are also there. So if I'm someone in let's say, Tanzania, and I want to be a conservationist, I've got far fewer chances and opportunities than someone in the UK. So that's not right, is it? It's not that it's just not right. It's that it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't help conservation. So conservation can't combat the challenges that it needs to combat with our current effort. Our current effort is too small. It's too concentrated in a few people's hands. And it's not moving. It's not innovating fast enough. We need 10, 100 times more people as professional conservationists doing work that is appropriate for their the situation that they're dealing with in with wherever they're from. So we need to build real national capacity in conservation, and with that capacity, that means that conservation funds will be more equally distributed, and job opportunities will be more equally distributed, and who is in charge of setting, you know, international and national agendas in conservation is more equally distributed, and it's more inclusive. So it's not just in a kind of a geographic sense, it's also even within a geography. For some people, it's really easy or easier to get into conservation, you know, depending on your background, you know, how much, you know, as you said, as you know yourself, or will soon find out, conservation doesn't pay very much, and it's really hard to get into. And so you have to make a lot of sacrifices, and you can only make those sacrifices if you've got some personal wealth, or you can stomach those sacrifices, or you're lucky enough to get a scholarship or something. But if you can't get a scholarship, then it's all about, well, okay, I need 6 months of experience. What do I do? You know, how do I get that? Well, okay, I'll go out and volunteer for 6 months. Not everyone can afford to volunteer for 6 months. Only people that can afford to it can do it. And it's not just a case of motivation. It's a case like, you know, either I do volunteering and my family starves, or I don't, I get another job. And now I don't have any volunteering experience. I don't have any connections. I'm still motivated, but I just can't start saving wildlife. So we want to overcome all those kind of barriers to make conservation accessible, so that anyone motivated and capable can have a really wonderful career and also just make a difference. All the training we provide is all focused about how to make impact, how to achieve impact, how to measure it, how to organize your team to achieve it. And we've designed them from learning how to do that in the field. Lots of things are in the conservation world are academic, theoretical, and not sufficient to actually put into practice. The things to consider, things to learn from, brilliant, but they're not. We provide a practical framework about how to do things, and that's really a big difference between our training and just learning about a subject through journal papers. Yeah, that would be my answer to that.
I think you had a good point, because in India, like, conservation was really concentrated with a few people, but in the last few years, it's changing. There's been a lot of CSR funds, a lot of scholarships to people and indigenous people getting into conservation. So I can say maybe in the last 4 or 5 years, it's starting to change a bit. There's a lot more funding. So my next question is that most people assume that to be a conservationist, you have to be a biologist. But there's a lot more skills, as you said, there's a lot more required to actually conserve animals other than just being an ecologist or a biologist. What would be your advice to people starting a conservation career? Like, what skills should they be focusing on?
Yeah, I think for sure, you don't have to be a biologist to be a conservationist. You know. So if you think about what conservation is, it's not an academic pursuit. And it's not something where the challenge is to get ecological information and do something with it. That's not the challenge. The challenge is to change people's behavior of whatever group it is, be it a government, or work with people to enable them to do what they want to do if they're not empowered, like a local community, or run a campaign to change attitudes in the general population, or lobby to change laws and things. None of that is to do with ecology or animal behavior. So why conservation is a bit backwards is because it has been created as an academic pursuit. Conservation biology is something from universities, and it starts with understanding, you know, animals and ecosystems and things like that. And that's my background as well. But that's all that does is provide. So all that does, it's not all that does. It important. It provides a very important function. It provides the information. And it's an information source. So people in university are trained to collect information. Brilliant. We need that info. But there's a big difference between that info and doing something with it. So conservation is about doing something with it. And the info feeds into that. So you might have, and you might need a researcher on your team to get you data, not just on the ecological aspects of a situation, but sometimes more importantly, on the social aspect of the situation. You know, whether we discover it or not, the jungle and the animals are going to take care of themselves. You know, the problem is, why is it being threatened? What are the threats? Who's driving what? And what is driving the threats? Who's involved? And how do we change that? And that's all not just social. It's not just a social science question. Social science kind of tells us what the situation is, why things are happening. The other part of that is how do we change that, which is not quite just a social science approach. It can be informed by social science, but it's more of a social marketing approach about how to change behaviors and nudge people and partner with people and empower groups. And that's totally different. And you don't get taught that in universities. So, and that's just the activities, the conservation activities. But it's not just activities. Activities just don't happen just floating around in space. You need an organization, or at least you need a team. You need a team with a vision and a mission and probably a website and a bank account and some funds and people to hire people, people to manage people, and people to report on to donors, to stakeholders, to communicate. And so the skills are how to create an organization, how to run an organization, including all the operational skills, all the finance skills, all the HR skills, all the comms skills, all of that stuff. Then it's about how to deliver conservation. So all the ops is set up. Now you've got the funds, now you've got the org, everything. Now to how to deliver it. And that's how to manage things, how to plan and manage and report on your conservation work. And that's a management skill. It's nothing to do with ecology. It's how to manage things from start to finish. And you don't get that taught in that in university either. So conservation needs conservation organization leaders. We need people in HR, we need people in finance, we need managers. Then underneath those managers, you need technical experts to either do some research, either in ecology or social research. And then you need a lot of other levels of workers that are carrying out the work that your organization does, which might be quite specialist, like lobbying, or might be training rangers, or it might be empowering communities, working directly with the communities. So there's so many different skill sets involved. And ecological research is an important one, but actually it's a bit of a minor one when it comes to carrying out conservation.
That is a very good point. So amongst all your courses, which has been the most popular and why?
The most popular one is the project management for wildlife conservation. Why? It's for aspiring conservationists. Every job asks for project management skills or some kind of experience. No one has it. And they can try and say, well, I ran my research project. That's not really project management. And you look the same as everyone else. So people take the project management course to make them stand out above other job applicants. And then for the conservation professionals, they're already working in a job. Then every day they are running. That's how you do conservation, running projects. Every one of them is running projects, and you either do it really well or you do it really badly. So their incentive is to improve on how they do things. Because when you do well, the project management stuff, it makes things work really smoothly and you get things done on time or better than expected. And when it's done badly, it kind of sucks up all your time and things go really bad. So that's why that one is the most popular.
So are there any new courses being made right now?
Yes, we are making 5 new leadership courses. One of them we've got advertised at the moment, but the other 4 will come in the next couple of years. And that's all about developing, for individuals to develop their leadership qualities. It's not about being in a positional sense, the top of an organization. It's nothing to do with that. It's about the whole thing about leadership is how to motivate others under a shared vision. So you can have, you can apply leadership qualities towards your boss to help motivate them in a certain direction. You can do it sideways to a teammate. You can do it to someone you manage. You can apply it to a stakeholder. And so each leadership training course covers a different theme. Like the first one we're doing is all about learning. It's about leading yourself. It's about being understanding how to set yourself up so that you're continually learning and aware of your own effects on others, and being and by recognizing that, having this feedback loop where you can always think, oh, you know, I didn't do that very well, you know, and how to improve on that. So that's the kind of foundation for the other leadership courses as well. Other things we're looking into that I'm particularly passionate about is community-based conservation. Because I think everyone, you know, lots of conservation projects, they interact with communities, but often it's tokenism, and often it's like a kind of quite patronizing in a way. It's kind of like, oh, well, let's do some alternative livelihoods, or, you know, they're poor, let's give them some, you know, something or other and they'll be all right. And meanwhile, we'll ask them not to do some destructive behavior. And that really points to a lack of understanding about how to work with communities. Community-based conservation is about really understanding what the communities aspire to do and what their relationship is with the biodiversity that you're interested in saving. You're coming in, you don't know about this community, you're not part of them. You're passionate about saving, let's say, gibbons or something in a national park. And it doesn't appear on the surface that the communities are, because they're doing some weird stuff, like maybe they're chopping down trees or whatever. So you think, oh, you know, they're poor, they're chopping down trees for fuel wood. You know, let's give them some fuel wood stoves or something, and then they won't need to do that anymore. And that, from that starting point, you haven't really understood at all what communities, and also you're assuming that they don't care about that jungle and those gibbons, and you're probably very wrong. So community-based conservation is really about not only understanding more fully about the community's aspirations and its relationships to other groups and the biodiversity on which it probably depends, but it's also about being led by them, about handing over control, about you, what you want to do in your way. Say, well, okay, you feel this way, so how should we do this? What do you want to do? And involving them from the word go in the planning and then the delivery of the conservation work. And it's a totally different way of doing conservation. There's actually no, amazingly, that we can find. There might be the odd bit in university, but where it's mentioned, you know, that you might read a paper on community-based conservation, have a chat about it, but we can't find any real focused training on it or best practice on it, amazingly. So that's the next topic also we're going to focus on.
I think community conservation, based conservation, is a very big thing, especially when, because in a country like India, where there's 300 million people living in or around forests, the communities have to be involved properly for conservation to succeed, because we have increasing tigers, increasing leopards, elephant populations, but 300 million people who actually want to live a better life. So that's a very important skill, I'll say, in the coming future. My final question for you is, what has been your greatest learning experience from a wild team?
My greatest learning is that if you do something positive, if you empower people to do something that you think is important, or that you and they think is important, and you're kind of empowering them to do what they want to do rather than just what you want to do, you're not trying to, then amazing things will happen. And by empowering, I mean not just providing them with kind of skills or funds or equipment, that kind of thing, It's about enabling them to take ownership of what they want to do. So, for example, in Bangladesh, and also to work with groups that are motivated to make a positive change. So in Bangladesh, for example, you're mentioning about, you know, increasing tigers and leopards, and of course you get conflict with that. And we thought, well, okay, we can't solve this problem. And then it seemed like the villagers just hated tigers. You know, when they came to the village, they just beat them to death with farm implements. So it seems like, okay, why are they doing that? So we spent a lot of time talking to the communities, work out why. And it came out that it wasn't that they hated the tigers. Actually, they really loved the tigers. They saw them as guardians of the forest. But why they were killing them was because there was a cultural thing about being brave, about if a tiger's in your village and you're a man and you're sitting at home and you're not doing something about it, that was your one point in time to say, I'm going to save this village, and this was your only way of doing it. And so we thought, well, we worked with villagers to come up with an alternative, because they did want to save the tigers. They didn't want to save their village. So we just helped them have a different way of expressing those wishes that they wanted to do. And so we trained up, in one place that had a lot of tiger problems, we trained up a team. We turned up, we said, you know, we can train you in how to protect your village from tigers while not killing them, if you like. And if you don't want to, that's all right. No problem. It wasn't an enforced thing. And they had a chat and they said, okay, yeah, we'll do that. I said, well, okay, then who do you want us to train? You know, it's up to them. Every time it's their decision. Okay. And then they had a chat and they got seven people. And they just discussed, they chose them, who the leader was. Well, okay. Well, we trained them. And then they had some successes in protecting their village. And we didn't pay them anything. And we're talking about the some of the poorest people on earth, these villagers. And but they were doing it for their own purposes. The thing about, and they were ridiculed to start off with. People thought, well, this is a joke. You're doing it, but you're not be paying for anything. It's just ridiculous. Because the idea until that point was that the tigers, they revered the tigers, but the tigers were someone else's. They're the forest departments, or maybe the kind of owned by the NGO, kind of. But now we're saying, if you want to do something about your village and your tigers, then we'll help you do what you want to do. So it wasn't doing it for us. So when you start paying people for stuff, you have to be really careful, because what you can do is make a situation where you've taken all ownership away from them. And so that you're doing it for me. You're not doing it for someone else. You're doing it for your pay packet. And the pay packet comes from us. And as soon as that pay packet is gone, then motivation is gone. And indeed, because of that pay packet is there, their motivation may be less than it was before. Just think of why you're doing conservation, or anyone's doing conservation. It's because it's in your heart. And it's because you want to express yourself and do something meaningful. And you're not doing that for someone else. It might be nice, you know, if you can get by or whatever and sustain yourself, brilliant. But you're doing it for yourself. And if that's all taken away from you, then it's very demotivating. So that was one of the major... Yeah, so in short, the major learning is to empower people to do what they want to do if they want to do something positive. And if you're trying to, and never try and change, bother changing people that are unmotivated. I won't mention the groups, but I spent 4 years trying to motivate a group that couldn't care less, and it's just a total waste of time. Find motivated people and empower them. That's number one lesson. But the second one I'm going to sneak in is, don't take away ownership. Never take away ownership of conservation from a group that's motivated, because you'll destroy the thing that will create change. And so because of how that was set up, then after a while, you know, they got respect within their village and had some success. And then the next door village turned up and said, Can we have some of that? Can we have some training? I said, okay, we're going to train you. We're not going to pay you anything. You're going to pick your own team, you know, and they did that. And suddenly we made, over 2 years, we made about 50 teams, 360 volunteers of villagers, saving them, saving their own tigers, saving their village, not for us, just for themselves. And that was a great success.
I think that is a very nice story to end off. So thanks for your time again.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, and I enjoy enjoyed chatting to you. And it's a brilliant initiative of yours to do these interviews. And I look forward to watching the other ones, and just hope people watching get more excited and get more confident about getting involved in conservation, because whoever they are, nature really needs them.